Hey friends, we wanted to take a quick minute and personally invite you to two really special gatherings coming this fall. First, our intentional motherhood retreat in Portland, Oregon, October 15th through the 17th, and then our intentional fatherhood retreat in Austin, Texas, November 12th through the 14th. Honestly, these retreats have become so much more than events for us. They've become spaces where people encounter God, experience healing, honesty, friendship, freedom, and real transformation. We live in a world that is full of information. We have podcasts, books, content, advice, but transformation requires more than information. Sometimes you need space, you need community, you need honesty, you need the presence of God, and you need to get around other people who are fighting for the same things you are. At these events, we've watched marriages soften again. We've watched fathers come out of hiding. We've watched mothers breathe deeply again. We've watched people feel seen, known, challenged, and deeply encouraged. And we would genuinely love for you to join us. You can learn more and grab tickets at intentionalparents.org. And for all things fatherhood, you can visit intentionalfatherhood.org. We hope to see you there. You're listening to the Intentional Parents Podcast, brought to you by Intentional. Intentional is all about spiritual formation in the family. We desire to bring biblical hope and practical help. Enjoy this week's conversation. Today on the show, we have Catherine Wolf. Elizabeth and I just recently had the privilege to sit down and to connect with Catherine, and we had the most lovely conversation. Catherine leads something called Hope Heals, which is a ministry that gives people hope in the midst of suffering and how to live well even when life is really hard and really painful. She's written a handful of books, but one of our favorite, we'll just mention it really quick, is Treasures in the Dark, which is a 90-day devotional that has just been so helpful in the daily struggle of suffering. A list of her books will be in the show notes, so make sure to go check those out. Buy all of them. They're all good. They're all worth it. But we have just been especially impacted by her in many different ways. During our conversation, we were able to touch on the very real rawness of suffering, what it looks like in the daily ways that we live with our kids, with our spouses. We went through the list of how does God actually not waste our pain and how can we become better through the pain that we experience. The truth is, for all of us that are listening, even myself included, we do not get to escape pain this side of heaven. And so this episode will bring so much hope no matter where you are at. And I have just complete confidence that between our conversation and the Holy Spirit's application, you will be lifted up and encouraged, as I know Elizabeth and I were. Also want to say thank you to everybody who has rated, subscribed, and even left a comment. Whether you know that or not, it helps get the mission of Intentional out. And it is such a gift when you pause and do that. Let other people know about it. It's so helpful. So if you haven't had a chance, can I just request, please, would you take a second to do that? Also, want to say thank you so much to our incredibly generous legacy builders. This podcast would not be possible without the group, the army of people around the world that support Intentional financially to continue this mission of helping families form in the way of Jesus in this moment in time. It is a huge gift to partner with you all. And we just want to say thank you. But get ready and enjoy today's conversation with Catherine Wolf. All right, welcome to the show, Catherine Wolf. Catherine, we are so honored and privileged to have you on the show today. Welcome.
Thank you. I'm so glad to be here, guys.
Oh, this has been a longtime dream interview, I have to say. I know I've told you that. My kids actually have been making fun of me and telling me, Mom, you are like fangirling so hard.
Oh my gosh.
And to my daughter last night, I said, when somebody has like greatly impacted your life and your story by what they've written and how they've lived, it just that like hits you deep. And so I'm so excited to get to share you with our listeners because I know how much you have impacted me and so many more. I mean, I've got a group text going of friends who I just like was so excited, had to let them know that we get to have a conversation because, man, I just think your story is so powerful. And so I am just excited for you to get to share it. For those of you who don't know what your journey has been like for the past, how many years has it been now?
Nearly 18 on the 21st.
Okay. So tell everybody listening what happened 18 years ago that radically changed your life.
Yeah. As a perfectly, typically able-bodied young woman with no medical history, no family history, no warning, no symptoms. I had a six-month-old baby asleep in the next room, and as a 26-year-old, was in my kitchen making dinner, fell to my hands and knees, and they went all numb, started throwing up, and ended up having a massive brainstem stroke due to an AVM, an arterial venous malformation that I never knew that I had. It was a birth defect that I was born with in my brainstem that grew and grew and grew until I was 26 years old and ruptured then. And I went into 16 hours of micro brain surgery, and my life was spared. I obviously am still here, but dramatic sacrifices were made to keep me alive. And to this day, I am severely, that's a strong word, but pretty disabled, and can no longer do many, many very basic functions, including walk unassisted very much, see one image, hear out of both ears. Eating is very difficult. I can't drive a car. I only have full use of one hand. One hand doesn't work well, and on and on and on. But I'm living an amazing, flourishing life and actually doing really, really well.
Wow. Okay, so in light of all that, the quote I'm going to quote of you that was, I think, like the gateway that like unlocked a lot for me is out of your book, Treasures in the Dark.
Yeah.
And you just have this line that I have quoted so many times based off of, I believe, Psalm 116. And you say, I choose to believe that the lines have fallen in the lines have fallen in pleasant places.
The boundary lines have fallen in pleasant places. Absolutely. Yeah. That is Psalm 16:6, and I'm a huge fan.
Yeah. So, I mean, obviously it's been 18 years. We don't just like, I'm just going to make this choice right after something hard happens and I'm never going to struggle with the hard that happened.
Right.
But what has that journey been like? I'm just thinking of the people listening who are like, man, I choose to believe that this is good. You also talk about living a good, hard story. I love that two things can be true at one time. But like, was that journey easy for you? Was that journey tumultuous and hard for you? Like, what was that journey like for you of getting to be able to say that with confidence?
Absolutely. So for sure, it's completely complicated. Anyone who acts like their story is so great and easy and the boundary lines fall in pleasant places right out of the gate is lying. Because, I mean, there were about the first 5 years where I wasn't sure I could live this life anymore. I wondered if God had made a mistake by leaving me on earth in a body that didn't work. How was I supposed to care for my kids? How was I going to, do anything really? And did God make a mistake? And initially in those first 5 years, which I really always like listeners to know, 5 years, it's not as if I got out of bed the morning after my stroke and wrote a book about it. 5 years before even coming up for air. But in that time, I think I finally reconciled that if I was supposed to die, I would have died. But I did not die. I am here in the land of the living. Therefore, God wants me on earth right now. So that's a very different perspective than just I brushed death and didn't die. But no, if I was supposed to die, I would have. So I am not supposed to not be here. I am supposed to be here. God has worked for me here, purpose here, and I am seeing the goodness of God in the land of the living. And so I think that initial just almost a calling a sense of deep purpose and calling of I'm supposed to be here right now for this life that I am in. Just kind of perpetuated more and more and more living and an ability to begin to reconcile. Yes, there has been major hard stuff, suffering and pain, but that doesn't mean a flourishing life cannot coexist in that pain. And I think I was pretty black and white before my stroke of like, this is good, this is bad, distinct check boxes. And everything just went nuts after the stroke. And I began to understand that two things can be true. The things can be good and hard and good at the same time, that they very much coexist and aren't one note.
Yeah, as you're talking, the thing that comes to my mind, I recently read this verse again, and it was just such a powerful, and I'm still sitting with it. I love how scripture does that, by the way. Like you read something and it just, you can chew on it and chew on it and chew on it. It's such a wonderful gift. But Acts 13:36, I believe it is. It's just this phrase. And David fulfilled God's purposes in his generation. And then he fell asleep, which is code Bible for dead. He died.
Right. And
it's such a, I mean, what you're highlighting is your purpose and God's purposes that you are to fulfill in this generation weren't complete yet. And so it's just this beautiful reminder to me of like, when you have that heart and that posture, which of course did not just happen day one, such a process. Thank you for being honest about that. It's never just this linear, oh, tomorrow I woke up and I'm ready to write about this. It's in fact such a process. So thank you for being, you know, sincere about that, because it is. But that is such a gift for you to say that in such a way where, just like David, you know, he fulfilled God's purposes, not our own, not our like, what's our agenda? What's our, you know, what is our speaking schedule? What is our book schedule? What's our podcast release ideas? It's what are his purposes? And so I love that we get to like witness you fulfilling God's purposes in our generation. What a gift it is to be alive at the same time as Catherine Wolfe, you know, living on his story.
Thank you too. Goodness. Brooke and Elizabeth. Yes. Absolutely. Thank you.
Yeah.
I love that. Go ahead.
I was going to say, I love that you shared that verse. You said it's Acts 13:36.
Yes. Yeah.
I love that. I love that thought of God needed David there during that specific generation. That's a powerful thought. And take it a step further, God has designed it so that, for instance, my family, I could feel very much like a burden on my kids, my husband, like, oh my goodness. But no, God wants me here, which means God wants me in their lives, not as a burden, but as an asset to their lives. God has given me to them to enhance their lives, in fact, that it's kind of reverse thinking. It's I'm not their cross to bear. God wants them to learn from what I am living out. And that's a profound place for a parent to get to. I think so many parents who have problems of all different kinds feel very just saddened to think that this is negatively affecting their children instead of recognizing that the issues that the parents have are not a curse on their children, but are rather a glorious inheritance to their children. And that's a powerful, powerful reality that we get to be part of a glorious inheritance to the generations that follow.
Wow. We needed to hear that.
Yes.
Keep going, but yeah, I know we did.
That hits me deeply as I just have personally been wrestling a lot. I think I mentioned to you and our listeners know that I live with really intense chronic pain and just had a spinal surgery. I'm about to have another really big one in June. And I've been like deeply wrestling and grieving my own health and story. I've had a decade of grieving my daughter's story and really learning the beauty that comes from suffering, from lament, from honest grief with God, but have somehow never been able to fully grieve my own story because it's kind of, my health has been this moving target for the last 2 decades. But prior to the surgery I just had, I just read in one of your books, you told a story about looking across. I'd love for you to tell the story. When you looked across the room and your boys were assembling a bedside toilet for you, and you had this moment of, or you tell the story of wishing they were playing with Legos. But that story hit me so hard. I mean, just tears flowing, and really started to shift my perspective of, and it still needs a lot of shifting from feeling like a burden to my family to feeling like, nope, this is a part of their story too.
Absolutely.
Can you tell that story?
Elizabeth, I love that you are referencing that story. In 2020, I took a bad fall and tore my ACL, MCL, and meniscus. And after I tore it, it was such an intense injury that I actually had to have surgery. And after the surgery, I was bedridden yet again. And my husband ordered a bedside toilet for me. And when it came, as these things do, it was like IKEA style 18,000 pieces to put together.
Yes.
And my husband enlisted my two sons at that time, ages 13 and 5, to put together the bedside toilet. And I just knew that this was the moment that we were ruining their lives. That having to put together mom's bedside toilet was finally it. Like, I'd done it, ruining them. This was just so sad that this was their lives. This was so terrible. I just felt so sad of what I was doing to them. And what I did not recognize is that putting together a bedside toilet is like the most fabulous and fun Lego play imaginable. And a bedside toilet is pretty funny when you're a little kid. And actually, on a deeper level, doing the thing, like having to figure it out and assemble something fully and create and initiate is a profound gift we're giving this next generation of kids. So actually, the bedside toilet, putting together the assembly of that damn thing, was an opportunity for wonderful things for my kids, and quite the opposite of just, oh, I hate this, I can't believe I'm doing this, but instead like enhancing their lives. And it's funny, I think so many times we're really worried about how things are going to affect our children and not recognizing that them entering into our story, our needs, is actually to their great benefit, that they are developing things that we can never teach them, that character, like deep, real character, is not necessarily something that can be taught with words. They're getting that true, real compassion. Like, that's things that I long to impart to my boys. And those are things that they are getting without me ever having to use words to teach it.
Oh, that is so beautiful. And we throw out the phrase, although I don't think we've done a full episode on it, a lot about the importance of teaching your kids the theology of suffering as they are growing up, because suffering is universal. We all will suffer in some ways, some physically, some emotionally, some just suffering in the disappointments of life, this side of heaven. And we talk often about how we need to give our kids a framework for the fact that even if that's not maybe a strong part of their childhood, it will be a part of their life in some way. Because, you know, so often we see somebody goes through something hard in midlife and it completely shakes their entire foundation, and they deconstruct their faith. They walk away from Jesus. Because, and I think a lot about that passage at the end of the Sermon on the Mount when Jesus talks about building your house on the rock or on the sand.
Yeah.
So when the storms come, right. your house is still standing. And we don't really even always know what house or what foundation we're building on always.
Right.
Sand is not usually revealed until the storm comes. So what does that look like for you to teach your kids? I mean, your kids are getting to live a theology of suffering.
Mm-hmm. Right. You know what I'll say first, Elizabeth, that is fascinating is I think for a lot of us kids who grow into adulthood, we think as Christians, we've had a blessed life because good things have happened to us. Instead of recognizing, as Andy Crouch writes, we've had a charmed life that is decidedly different than a blessed life. Because, for instance, my life right now is blessed, but I didn't have eyes to see that before my stroke. I would have understood blessed and blessings as the good gifts God can give, that they're the goodies. They're the good health of body. They're the wealth. They're the things that are of this world, that's good things. Yeah. So I believe we need to teach our children that good things are the things of God, not the things of this world, and that a charmed life is decidedly different than a true blessed life. The blessed life has nothing to do with anything in this physical world. That a charmed life includes the trappings of the world that are great and can absolutely be celebrated with deep gratitude that the Lord has given. Yeah. But that's not what sustains us. That's not what keeps us here when things get hard. And we need to instill in our children an understanding of that difference.
Yeah. I have so many gritty questions about, because like what you just said, it breaks a lot of, especially momentary Christian thinking, because how many people, and you have them, I'm sure, and have had them over the years more than even we have, but you experience this deep level of people that cannot make sense of your life, because here you are objectively having to live a harder life. Even the list that you gave of the things that just are not working as easy as you would hope. How that impacts relationships, marriage and parenting, which we want to talk about, but it impacts every area of you. And then they're looking at you and you're smiling and you're like, actually, I'm still okay. I'm holding joy and pain, which is the most true. The mixture is the most true and fair thing this side of heaven, mixture of good and hard at the same time. But you know, as I'm just hearing you, that really does mess with so many people's very surface level understanding of what the good life is.
Right.
And so even as you're kind of highlighting this, my next question is really on marriage, but from your vantage point right now, could you just give us your definition currently of what the good life is?
Oh, sure. So fascinatingly, if you look at Psalm 84:11, for instance, that no good thing does God withhold from those walking uprightly with him. Well, how could that possibly be true when we know people who have anything but good things happening in their lives who are walking uprightly with him? Well, I believe that's because our definitions of good are all wrong. I believe the true definition of good is the presence of God in our stories. As the theologian I love, Sir Richard Baker, writes, the true good things of God are peace of conscience, joy in the Holy Spirit, the fruition of his presence in this life, and the assurance of his face in the next. These are the truly good things of God. And what's beautiful about that are those good things are nothing that the world could ever touch, ever take away.
Wow. That's a whole... If that's not a book or a teaching, please make it immediately. I'm sure that's so helpful, but really that's really helpful. My next question, and I'll hand it to Elizabeth, but you know, as a husband, and Elizabeth has mentioned, you know, our life has taken a turn that we haven't expected. You know, it's different, but there's an overlap for sure.
Yeah.
And you know, my curiosity is how this impacts marriage. And feel free to go as deep or as shallow as you'd like, invitation, obviously. Sure. But I know for us, I can just say for us, and we're pretty open and honest about it, like it has been so challenging. Because there's grief mixed in, there's sadness of what was or what could be or what might have been. So there's grief coupled with life looking very different, it being objectively more challenging and harder. There's the whole like you want people to understand, but honestly, unless they're in it, they just really don't even our closest people don't get the full weight of the dynamics of our relationship because of the different levels of health, but then also the different details with our special needs daughter. Like, it's really hard to tell people in full, like, this is hard. And that obviously plays within our marriage. I want to be a better husband than I am. I want to be a better caretaker than I am. But there's so many moments that it just hits me and I'm like, this is so hard. And right. I run out of the grace and I run out of the patience and I run out of the, you know, I just get overwhelmed. And obviously that's my invitation to formation, which is a slow chipping away. That's a setup to just ask,
yeah,
how could you encourage those that are listening to thrive, to grow, to maybe even just get to a place of understanding? Because there's so many elements that go into a family that's suffering, especially medical conditions. And how is this impacting your marriage? What kind of perspective, hope, or guides could you give? We want to let you know about a new offering, a 31-day prayer devotional entitled Sowing a Hidden Seed, Daily Prayers for Your Child's Spiritual Growth. This book was born out of desperation. I didn't know how to lead my kids spiritually, so I started praying. Honest, dependent, daily prayers. Jeremiah 29:12 says, "Then you will call on me," God says, "and come and pray to me, and I will listen to you." If you want to learn more, head to intentionalparents.org. And if you partner with us at $25 a month or more, we'd love to send you a copy as a thank you.
Absolutely. You know, I have an amazing therapist, and she has talked to me on many occasions about how she believes Jane and I are trauma bonded in a good way. Trauma bonding can be a very negative thing. You could bond with an abuser or something horrible. This is the opposite, that trauma has a way of binding a couple together so they can cope with a lot of hard things. And I believe that that can happen in any marriage where there is significant suffering of you're in it, you're bound, you've been to the depths, but you're with each other in it. And you get to choose to be a partner in it. And that's what Jade has done so beautifully. And I pray, I'm doing too. I know it's probably pretty messed up and imperfect on my part, but I think couples, instead of running away in their suffering, have to come together in it and be kind of teammates on the same team with whatever the other spouse is dealing with. And for us, a deep trauma bond from the massive stroke that nearly took my life and me becoming disabled has meant we don't sweat the small stuff as much. You know, we've been through near life and death. So some dumb little weird thing we said just doesn't carry the weight of the gravity of what we've lived through. And I think that does really change how you interact as to your spouse and hopefully your whole family.
What's one of the, with where you're at right now, what is one of the things that you guys are still working through? And I'm not looking for dirt here as much as I'm looking for, like, where do you find this show up? You guys have been at this for how long? Have you guys been married now?
Well, we've been married 21 years and I'm about to have my 18th celebration of living. So the majority of our marriage, for sure.
So yeah, what are some of the areas that you are still just growing in? Like, what are some of the areas that you're finding like, yeah, we thought we had that one solved. And I'll just as a prerequisite, like I would have said, like, yeah, I'm pretty gracious. I love to be able to help Elizabeth. I love to be able to be present to her. In this last round of like how everything has happened and how like the health journey just declined really quick with her body specifically. Yeah. It brought up all of this stuff to where I was like back to the drawing board, like, oh, I'm not even as close to as ready, understanding, gracious, present as I want to be. You know what I'm saying? So yeah. I'd just be curious, like for you guys this long in, what are some of the things that you're still just like either learning or that perspective?
Yeah. So when I had the stroke, I lost all hearing in my right ear. And it almost sounds funny, but it is a huge issue to this day in our marriage that I can't hear out of my right ear. So depending on where I'm standing, I can't hear Jay talking to me in the house. And it causes like old people fights constantly. We can hear he's annoyed, I'm annoyed, and we're going back and forth. And that's kind of a funny example, but it's actually a real problem. And then we literally are not hearing each other. and so I probably said that one. But what else? You're looking for more, I'm sure, than that.
No, I just, not well, more.
I have a question.
Yeah.
Like maybe in that same vein. And this is a selfish question because I'm currently working through this.
Absolutely.
And I would imagine just, I don't know a ton of your life before, but just little snippets of even just the career journey you were on.
Yeah.
You had a what it seems, a side of you that had an achiever part where you were a go-getter before this happened and still are in huge ways.
Enneagram 3, for sure.
Okay, all right.
There you go.
and I have always been on just a kind of even how I deal with stress and even how I used to deal with processing my emotions was to just go do. I've been independent. I can take care of the kids by myself. I can do all, like I could just do, physically do a lot.
Yeah.
And in this journey, especially the last 6 years of being able to do less and less and less and less physically.
Yeah.
And just having less energy, less capacity, and just my capacity continuing to shrink. I also have like a old childhood message and story of it's not okay to need anything. And it's not okay to be a burden to anybody or inconvenience anybody. So that comes up for me huge in our marriage because I am so afraid of being a burden or inconveniencing. So any little hint of frustration from him, and I take it as this, he has just completely rejected me because I need
Catherine,
something.
You're going to be our marriage counselor today and people can listen if they want, but thank you for.
But I mean, I would imagine that you've had to work through like and you already kind of touched on this of like, you are that now you've been able to see you are not a burden to your family. Your life and story is a gift from God. In your kids, in your husband, down to the little things of how they have to help you and the things that you can't do for yourself and those things. But I would imagine that was a journey to get there. So I don't even have a question there, but
absolutely. No. You're so right that all of the hardest parts of my journey are deeply informing the lives of our children. And that's a profound gift to their lives, and specifically about marriage. So Jay is an Enneagram 8. He is super strong. He's an advocate. And I'm a 3. And we are both firstborns, high achieving. It's intense. We definitely have our share of disagreements and like things done the way we like them done. And we'd like to be the cruise director and run the show. And it's created tension after tension after tension. But what has provided a lot of comfort to us both is that tension is not the problem in a marriage. It's if you don't have the ability to resolve it, that's a problem. That you can have tension and argue, and that's okay. If you know how to resolve it well, if you know how to like talk about it and work through it and not, you know, passive aggressively put it under the rug and try to move on and nod and hold just really bad, stubborn stuff against each other. But no, be more open. And hopefully as you all are experiencing with all that you are carrying and with a special needs child, just, we don't have time for all the drama of like passive aggression and, you know, like being mad and ignoring each other and whatnot. Like, we kind of are forced to be more in the moment and direct because we got other stuff to deal with around here. And I actually think that's a gift of more living on the edge when life is hard and there is medical suffering or suffering of all kinds. Like, we're just going to need to like deal with this more directly. And I think that can be a gift of hardship.
Yeah, no, I agree 100%. I'm thinking of the people listening who, you know, we talk often of like what a gift it has been in our marriage and in our story that both of us have been on a journey together and on a journey individually to let pain shape us and grow us, to heal, to and to face grief honestly. And we talk often of, man, how hard would it be if only one of us wanted to take that journey?
Right.
And if one of us wanted to reframe or walk away from Jesus or live a life just seeped in bitterness because of how things have turned out. And I know that that is often what happens even within a marriage where one spouse is like, no, I want to choose this path. And the other spouse chooses another. Like, what would you say maybe to the one who is choosing, I want this to grow my life. I want to move towards Jesus, not away, but their spouse is not. Like, what would you say to them? What hope would you give to them to kind of hang on and keep going?
Goodness, the very first thing I thought, and I guess this applies to the spouse that is walking with the Lord, to the other spouse, is to continue to live a life where the spouse who maybe is not interested in Jesus anymore or is straying can't resist. Like, you know too much. You know what I mean? Like, I feel like when all of this happened to me, people ask me all the time, well, why didn't you just walk away from Jesus? And both Doug and I felt deeply like, where else would we go? Truly, like, he's all there is that has sustained. And do you not see? Can you not perceive? So I guess my number one thought is live a life that continues to show your spouse, this is working for me. Clinging to Jesus is making the difference in how I cope with this reality. And I like to say to the watching world where not everyone is believing, how's that working for you? Like, how's it going not to trust Jesus in your storm? And I think that speaks powerfully of the peace that he has given me as I walked through this valley. It's pretty hard to argue with that the comforter of my soul is all I really need. I don't need just relief. I need the giver of all comfort to comfort me. I don't just need a momentary, like, break. I need a sustained comfort that all will be well. And I think that's the number one thing we can show a spouse who is not where we are. And goodness, deep, real prayer that the Lord will open their eyes, I think, is so important of, like, what I am believing to my core is what I long for you to know. And I'm going to pray for you that the Lord will come into your life and transform, open your eyes. You know, I think for Jay and I, and probably for y'all as well, iron has sharpened iron, that we get to do this together and we're going the same direction. And I know it is so difficult when your spouse is not on mission with you in it, truly. Mm-hmm. Understanding that this is co-laboring to the end. And I think prayer must be a tremendous part of how we endure well, how we suffer well.
Yeah.
Mm.
Yeah.
I want to know from, we work together. It's really easy, by the way, to work with your spouse.
Oh, absolutely.
I want to know, because as I understand, you and Jay work together, correct?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So my question for you, and this is totally on topic because it has to do with the sanity in life. How long have you guys worked together? And then give us just some insights on that. How is that going? What is your guys' dynamic as two people, that, like you said, different extremes?
Elizabeth's
intense one. I'm a seven with an eight wing. So we totally understand that, like, literal, like, just intense in different directions.
Yeah, totally.
So it's both like a blessing, and it's also like there's moments where it can be a huge burden, in the sense that if you do not work things out or figure out how to work together, it's really complex. So would you give us just some of, from, even again, there's no right or wrong. It's like, from your perspective, what are some of the lessons you've learned with working with your spouse? What are some of the things that you could just give?
Sure. So Jade and I founded Hope Heals, our ministry, after 5 years post-stroke, so in 2013. And since then, he is the CEO of Hope Heals, which is, we have a camp for families with disabilities, and we have a coffee shop that employs people with disabilities. We have just a thriving ministry, content-based. We've written books, and I speak a lot. Really sort of redefining our very sort of skewed theology of suffering in our world and pointing people to authentically engage Jesus in their storms. And so he's the CEO, and I like to say I'm the CIO, the Chief Inspiration Officer.
Yeah, you are. Yeah, you are. You're doing it.
Thanks. We finally recognize we both can't be the chief of this operation, that we needed one chief. And Jay was going to fill that role, but he's more back of the house. He's kind of running things behind the scenes more. I'm more front of the house. And there was a lot of wisdom in the clarity of that. So I think that is super important for spouses who work together. It's clarity and roles of who's doing what, whose purview is that and whose purview is not that. And I think that's a huge, huge thing for couples when they work together. I think couples who are together have to show each other a lot of grace, because they're spending a whole lot of time together, first of all, and really needing to implore, like, okay, so my livelihood is tied to you, everything. So we're going to need to figure this out really well and treat each other very well. You know, I think getting kind of a coworker mindset is not possible when it's your spouse. You've got to treat your spouse really, really, really well, not just as you would your coworker, but as your person. The person that you're going to go home with at night. And that's a different place. And I think it's a holy burden. It's complicated. But I think the Lord so beautifully works for couples working together for him. So keep going, guys.
You know, as you're talking, I'm thinking of, we're talking about couples who like work together for their jobs. But I'm thinking of every couple, every mom and dad raising a family, you are working together. And everything you just said applies to both of those arenas. And I can't remember what movie it is. It's a wonderful quote where the guy says, "I feel like I'm running a daycare with somebody I used to date."
Yeah, seriously.
And I feel like that is so often, you know, a decade in, 2 decades in, or raising a house full of little kids, just the mode that we can get into. And I think what you just said about, we can't treat each other as coworkers, even though we are, whether in an actual working sense or just raising a family, but how we treat each other really, really matters. And I think
that
can be the first thing that we lose when, as stress begins to rise.
I'm humbly taking, though, like that, what I'm taking, Catherine, I'm going to give you some active feedback. Thank you. Because I think even with you and I, like, our organization is growing and changing very rapidly, which is both beautiful and we're grateful. But the complexities of that is really, tricky on our marriage because we're like going out to dinner. I'm like, hey, let's go on a date night. And they're like, let's talk about our speaking calendar. And we're like, no. Like but she does a good job of like we'll honor those things, but it's so hard when this is our life. Like, so it's really tricky because it isn't just like, oh, we have this line in at dinner and we're not going to talk about it. Like everything we do in work impacts our marriage and vice versa. And I mean, there's plenty of times, even like a week ago when it's like, we were supposed to be podcasting. We had a massive fight before. You know how hard it is to podcast with your spouse when you're like, I really just can't even be around you right now. I gotta de-escalate. And so, I mean, like just that realness. So I'm calling my team like, hey guys, I know you're hoping for a podcast this week, but that's not happening. Cause we're
not ready to help.
We're trying to emotionally work through our own stuff before we
get. Yeah. Anyway. Oh, it's just, absolutely. Yeah. Extremely intense because when you work with your spouse is always there.
Yes.
Yeah, totally. You know, Jay and I will talk a lot about how funny it is. We could be having some huge emotional argument and we're duking it out. And it's so important. And then it's bedtime and he's got to put lubricant in my eye for me to go to sleep. And how hysterical. We could be in the middle of this huge fight, but pause, he's got to get right up in my face and put lubricant in my eye. And like, there can be nothing more maddening for both of us than being like that eye to eye, taking care of me. But that's beautiful. It's kind of a reality check and deep down love each other and care for each other, even in the midst of hard moments.
Oh, I have to say that what you're saying, like, I don't even care if this is a podcast or anyone's listening. This is our this is our conversation with you. So if people want to listen, great. But we have that dynamic where she often can't go to sleep unless she, like, where her back is right now, like, unless she has like deep tissue massage of like her lower back, upper quad area. Yeah. And it's so it's a very like there's no like, oh, I can just rub her back. It's like elbows. It's a very physical all in situation, exhausting even, you know?
Yeah.
And so there's many times, I mean, that you're, what you're saying is so true. It's like we're in an argument and then we're just laying in bed still, like trying to work it out or just frustrated. And she just leans over and just goes, can you please rub my back? And I'm like, oh, like everything. And he's like, rub your own back, you know, like, but then
if I could, I would. Like,
and it's that act of like, you know, and it's not noble because I'm not doing it always with a great heart, but you know, there's that moment where that suffering or that need, and I would say even your need to have your husband do that or Elizabeth's need for me to help her in that way that only I can. I think there is a healing element. You know, there's a physical closeness, which again, you're stating, you don't want at that moment. You're like, I don't want to be around you at all. Yes. I don't want to smell your breath.
But it reframes the moment. Absolutely.
Absolutely. Yeah.
So it's just those little secrets of suffering that I think are easy to miss. And they're very just gritty and real. But, you know, those are the domestic things of life that
absolutely
are so important. And you're just giving me so much hope of our own, you know, for me personally, I'm just like, okay, that's, I felt like it's a good thing most likely, but just like gives me more hope, you know, next time. I think you're probably going to use this now to be like, you need to rub my back even more, but we'll see. We'll see what happens.
I have you.
Well, that is what is beautiful about our very physical suffering is in a marriage is you having to physically rub her back, Jay having to put lubricant in my eye. Is there something so gritty and real and earthy about very physically taking care of each other that is so right, that is so like not of this world? It feels holy. It's special.
Yeah.
There's a sacredness to care, I believe.
Oh, absolutely. Ronald Rollheiser, I don't know if you've ever read his book, The Domestic Monastery. But
oh, haven't, but even, no, tell me.
Oh, it's so good. Oh. But just that phrase alone, that like all the domestic things that the world doesn't say is valuable, or maybe we might say that it is, but we don't actually live like it is. There are no accolades for those daily domestic things. But his whole kind of argument is that raising children and all the domestic life that happens with that, and just constantly meeting the needs of our kids, the, you know, 400 interruptions a day, like that is actually where spiritual formation happens, more than at a monastery in silence and solitude, in all of those, you know, away places. It's actually in all of those everyday non-glamorous moments that our life with Jesus is actually formed. And I think that is so worked out and lived out, not in isolation, but in
what you're saying,
relationship with other people.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Absolutely. It's in the mundane moments. Absolutely. Yes. It's beautiful.
Yeah. Okay. I want to shift gears a little bit.
Yeah. Yeah.
You had a 6-month-old baby when the stroke happened.
Yes.
You do not just have one kid. You now have two.
Yes. I know.
Can
it's crazy.
Talk a little bit about, I'm just thinking of the decision of all decisions.
Right.
To decide to get pregnant again and have a baby after that. And, you know, we get asked all the time, how do you decide to have more kids? And how did you decide to have a kid after your kid with disabilities? Like, what was that like? And I just, you cannot be prescriptive. You can only tell your own story.
Right.
What was that journey for you?
Yeah. So after 7 years had gone by, so a long time, definitely not like a couple of years later, 7 years, I recognized that I was at a place and had been medically cleared to become pregnant again. And I had always wanted a large family. I actually wanted a bunch of kids. I'm a Southerner and from a big family. So I never thought I would be the mother of an only child. And early on, after the stroke, people would always say, oh, well, thank goodness you had a baby before the stroke. Yeah. And I'd always be like, well, that wasn't it. I mean, was it? So finally, when I was medically cleared to become pregnant, I did have a second biological child. And John, we named him John because the meaning of the name John, the Lord has been gracious, and he had. And actually, his middle name, Nestor, was for my neurosurgeon, Nestor Gonzalez, whose life's work has been giving second chances to patients just like me. So John Nestor was born at 7:07 a.m. on the 7th floor of the hospital that I had been in, that same wing of the hospital, UCLA, dying 7 years before. I gave birth there. Nuts. And Nestor Gonzalez actually came to my hospital room that day and held baby Nestor in his arms. It was really unbelievable. Beautiful. Just this picture of redemption. And John is now 10 years old, and it has been a journey to have both James and John grow up with a disabled mama, and that has been beautiful and complicated. And yet, it, as we've discussed on here, I believe that God is going to use it as a profound gift to their lives. And, you know, it has not been one note. And probably in your lives, you can attest. Many things are not one note. And yet, when I see a picture of the four of us, I think for about the first 2 or 3 seconds, I look at that photo and I'm really sad. I'm like, this really is nearly tragic. I'm in a wheelchair. My face is paralyzed. Like, this is not as it should be. This is really like awful. And then if I keep looking, probably second, 3, 4, 5, I wake up to the reality of this picture that was making me so sad 2 seconds ago. This is a glorious photograph. This family should not be. This husband has stayed for 21 years. This 6-month-old baby is now 18 years old and going to college. This 10-year-old was not born when the stroke happened. This girl in that photograph should be dead. Like, this is a miracle photograph. And that's the same photograph that a few seconds before I saw as tragic. So do you see what I mean? We all see what we want to see in the picture. We can see pain and suffering and sadness and loss, or we can see, this is a miracle. I don't want to miss the miracle that is right in front of me because I'm waiting for the miracle to happen. Because I'm like, this doesn't look like what I thought it would. Well, welcome to life, everybody. Nothing looks like we thought it would, obviously. But there can be joy in what is. I like to say a lot that when we play the what if game that we all play, what if I would have done this? What if I would have done that? What if this would have happened? We just spin it. It's paralyzing. It's terrorizing of what if, what if. And I believe that's really the wrong question. I believe the right question is not what if, but what is. What is actually in the story? And what is all that really matters, because what is the actual life we are actually living. The theoretical things aren't real. This is. So how do I live this one precious life that God has given me? How do I steward this story? I don't know about y'all, but I know for me, and I imagine for you, my pain has been too precious to waste. Yes. It's cost too much. I've suffered too much to not let the Lord use every ounce of the story. So I want to be open-handed, say, Lord, this is not what I thought it would look like when I was a little girl. Nope. But I'm giving it to you. And I know that in you, all things work together. Somehow you are making this beautiful and using every ounce of it for your glory.
Preach, Catherine, preach. I mean it like you're just washing our soul. This wasn't for anyone else. This is for us. And I really mean that. And I mean, that's not tongue in cheek. That is like sincere. Thank you for just infusing our souls in a season where, you know, I get emotional because it's just a hard, you know, hard seasons. But thank you for just being sincere and breathing hope. Not just to us, obviously, but to so many, hope does heal. I mean, great name title.
Thanks. No joke.
But just to say that has been, you know, even just hearing what you just had said, it's like it keeps us going, I think is because it feels like there's those moments and I can only imagine you relate so dearly to it, but you almost are holding so many pieces of pain that you're like, how can it get any worse and not like crush me? You know, because that verse is true. Like, I'm crushed, but not destroyed. Like, that's true. We're not destroyed. Yeah. Although it does feel like there's even more crushing. And then we're like, okay, I think we got to the most of the crushing. And then there's like another element or angle. And obviously, like you're highlighting that the Spirit is the difference maker there. But thank you for breathing life into anybody listening, us especially, just to say to not waste that pain. Actually, when Birdie was in the hospital when she was 6 months old, and that's another story for another time, but I remember the prayer, and I don't even remember if it was the Holy Spirit or someone had told me to pray it. I don't even know where it came from, but it was like, Lord, just please do not waste this pain.
Right.
And in our life, that has been countlessly true. You know, he so far has not released us to waste it, and I'm grateful, but... Right. Man, it's heavy. And so I just, you know, I know there's so many moments, you know, right now you're sharing on a podcast, which is beautiful, and you're going to speak places, you know, soon or this week or other times, and it's going to be beautiful. But you also have to have Jay put things in your eyes tonight. And you also have to hold levels of disappointment when you're not able to do something with your boys, and nobody can hold, like, you still have to sit with this the moment this camera goes off. And so just so proud of you. You don't need to hear that from us, but so proud of you to hold it and continue to show up with joy, choosing joy.
Oh, likewise. Thank you.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think there is this place we come to that y'all probably reached before I did, of recognizing that I am grieving what life was supposed to look like.
Mm. Yeah.
Since I am grieving, I might as well steward it really well because no other options are available. Yeah. So I'm going to take all of the sadness and the grief and I'm going to steward it really well. And the reason I imagine you're there is because you're living it out on a podcast in ministry together, recognizing my expectations have been slaughtered by the world, slashed.
Yes.
Absolutely. Therefore, I will fight even harder to steward it well to his glory. And it's only for my good to do that. It's for a tremendous benefit to me to recognize this has weight. This matters. My life has not been perfect, neither has yours. But to God we look to show us where to go from here. And in doing that, we're showing someone else how to do it too.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. Oh.
And I think too that that becomes such a big part of our own healing. Like it sounds like, oh, we're doing that so that God can use it in somebody else's life. But I think simultaneously,
yes,
it's what heals us. And it's the beautiful, like the redemptions we get to see this side of heaven, knowing that a full redemption, your body will be fully restored someday. But as Brooke said, you still have to live today.
Absolutely.
And so is that like being willing to face our pain honestly with God and then talk about it and help other people with it. It's like you get to experience the earthly side of healing.
Absolutely.
And redemption.
You are. Yes, absolutely. Yeah. I like to say that the trail that we are blazing through our suffering will illuminate the way for someone else through their wilderness. And that deep giving comfort, because we've gotten comfort, that fueling and filling, it does change how we suffer. It gives us deep purpose in it. And it's a powerful force.
Mm.
Wow.
Can I ask a question that is, you know, this is something that I think is interesting. So we have a handful of different disabilities represented on the whole family. Elizabeth's mom lost her hearing when she was in her 20s and then fully deaf in 30s. And so she has a cochlear implant. She hears digitally. It's genetic. So actually when you were talking about hearing loss, Elizabeth also has major hearing loss and hearing aids and the whole thing. And so the thing you were just talking about, I feel like I just want to talk with Jay. So maybe you and her could just go talk. I need to talk to Jay.
Second podcast is with Jay.
I'm going to need to talk with Jay. But like, I'm laughing because like we have that very real old people tension at times too. Like, I just said it. You're like, no, you didn't. I'm like, I absolutely, now you're telling me I'm lying to you. What are you talking about? Anyway, it's so funny. But my question is, you know, with every, this is the setup. Her mom can't hear, but she has a cochlear implant. What's so cool about that is she would say it's her superpower to be able to take it off and hear nothing.
Right.
And to have the whole world go quiet.
Right. Totally.
It's her favorite thing. And our kids who are her grandkids, you know, they know they go up to Amma. They call her Amma and they run up. They go, Amma, are you plugged in? Like, are you plugged in? And most of the time, no. Like she'll grab, they know where the device is. They go get it. She hooks up. They can talk. She would call it a superpower. My question, what superpowers have you found that have come out of your disability? Things that honestly, if you didn't have some of these disabilities, either don't happen or wouldn't happen.
Oh, well, what a question. Goodness. One that instantly comes to mind is everything is slower because of my disabilities. I walk very slowly. Definitely, I've raced through life before, cramming things in everywhere. That is completely unavailable to me. This voice that you are hearing is not the voice pre-stroke at all. I sound entirely different. I have to speak slower, really work to articulate. And that's, you know, weird. It's hard. I was NPO, meaning nothing per oral, for the first 11 months. I did not eat food for almost a full year. And even now, all these years later, I still can't swallow food very well. It takes a long time and it's very arduous. And there is a slowness to life. And I think that might be my superpower, is having to slow down and really take things in and not move through life so quickly. And that is, that's a gift. We all move at a pace that is just wrong. We're going too fast. We're missing it. And hopefully I'm not missing it as much because it's slower than it would have been. And I think that probably is mine. I'm not totally sure, but that seems like it's mine. Actually, I have double vision. It's very severe. So like I'm seeing the screen, but then I'm seeing another screen up here with you on it. And seeing double could make you full on crazy, truly.
Yeah, yeah.
But I've adjusted to it and I know what image is real. And I think that is somehow, I haven't worked it out totally, but a very powerful informant to my life to know what image is real and which image is not. And to live my life looking at the real image. And that has been a deep, powerful superpower, I'd say, of mine.
Yes.
Knowing what's real.
Wow.
What I've heard throughout this whole conversation is you've spoken so much about the shift in perspective that is needed for all of us, because we have this deep longing in us to still be in the garden before the fall. Our bodies were made for that. Our relationship with Jesus was meant to always be in that constant state of connection and being known, being seen, and doing that for each other. And then we have the constant cultural narrative of what life is supposed to be, of what the good life is. And and we are raised in that. We can't get around that. Those messages will hit our lives from very young and every single day. And what I feel like you've just continued to impart to us and to everybody listening is really allowing the circumstances that have happened in your life, the Holy Spirit, the relationships God's given you, the everyday moments, to let God rewire our brains and how we see the world and really shift our perspective, which then completely shifts how we experience life.
Absolutely.
Because when our perspective is His, our life is experienced very, very different. Mm. And I think you are such a living example, physically, emotionally, what you've chosen to do with your pain, of to step into a perspective that is against even what our bodies want and against what culture says, but really is the flourishing life. And I think that's why you've ministered to me so much, because you're a constant reminder to like, no, perspective over here, perspective over here. Mm. It's not what I think it should be right in front of me.
Right.
It's different. And I'm just so grateful for just even the wisdom you've imparted to us today and to those listening. And it's been a reminder to me, and I think to Brooke too today, of even shifting our own perspective in the midst of the current chapter in our story. And so I just want to say thank you.
Yes.
You are incredibly kind to say that. And I have to tell you that I think loss has this crazy ability to create a space for the Lord to transform our understandings of everything.
Yes.
That space that's created, the Lord transforms our knockoff versions of goodness with His true goodness.
Yeah.
And when we get that, when we suffered and lost and wrestled, there's this understanding that, oh wait, goodness is not what I thought it was. Neither is literally anything else.
Yeah.
Everything's kind of turned upside down.
Yeah.
And yet there's a clarity to the breaking, to the sadness and the suffering. There's this weird, like, now I know how to live. That's like fueling. You feel like, okay, I can do this because I'm not doing this alone. And I'm going to look to the people who are looking to Jesus in this madness, in this falling apart world where things are not okay. But I've kind of woken up. I was asleep, but I'm awake now. And now I don't want the knockoff anymore. I don't want the counterfeit version of Jesus. I want the actual Jesus who comes in and sustains. And I think that's really cool that you're saying that. And thank you. Thank you for saying that.
Well, we couldn't be more grateful for your time. And you're giving people the, you know, if you think of reality, I love the idea or the word of realms, because I think it probably suits most like biblically what the kingdom of heaven can be like.
Yeah.
And certain translations talk about the realm of the kingdom of heaven, and it's right here. Like, it's crazy because the kingdom is here with us, but it's just, you know, it's not, it's reality is just so loud and frustrating and distorting. And so thank you for giving us a vision and looking into the realm of the kingdom of heaven. That's what I believe so many that suffer, but especially you, you're giving us a picture of like, hey, everything look like over here, this is what it seems like it should be, but not like, that's actually not at all what it is. It looks more like this, and this is real. This is the reality of the kingdom of heaven. And so just thank you. Thank you for giving us that. Thank you for being so kind with your time, but also with your life. And I know that we're not the only ones that get to experience the fruit of redeemed pain in your life. And so just deep gratitude as much as and as often as we can support all that you and Jay are doing, we will. And we're just grateful to have these moments to connect.
Oh, thank you, Brooke. It's been amazing to get to have this conversation with y'all. Elizabeth, you are so dear, and I am so, so grateful for fellow journeyers in this space. It is a gift to know you both.
Well, thanks for jumping on the show. We will, next time we're going to be talking with Jay. We have to talk with Jay too.
Yeah, absolutely. Next, we'll do both of us. Both of y'all, both of us. Yeah, totally.
Let's do it. Okay, thanks for being on the show, Catherine.
Thanks, Catherine.
Oh, thank y'all. Yeah.